guys, welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. I'm your host, Alexa Curtis. And as you guys know, I've had a few different dating experts on over the past 2 years since This Is Life Unfiltered launched. We had Amanda Bradford on. She launched this app called The League. We had one of my really good friends on who's a dating expert, Jenna Birch, back in the days when the podcast just started. And obviously, since my Radio Disney show, I try and have tried to tailor the content to be geared to a little bit more of a younger demographic. As much as I love talking to entrepreneurs, I really want to make sure that every episode is very appropriate for everything that I'm doing. So it's really awesome when I come across different entrepreneurs who have such fantastic ideas, have really made it from the bottom, and also are making society a better place. So 2019, 2018 have been the years of dating apps. I feel like every day a new app or idea or concept comes to life. And a lot of times when you're an entrepreneur, it's incredibly difficult to execute these ideas and actually make them happen. So there's so many people out there, so many of you guys who reach out who I know have different app ideas and try to bring them to life, and it doesn't necessarily succeed. So today I've got the founder of a really cool dating app called Loco. And I met him about maybe 6 or 7 months ago at an event in LA. And I thought the concept behind this app was really neat because it kind of takes out that awkward portion of the first date. So it really makes it a more virtual experience until you start to get to know somebody. So today I've got Vivek Jain in the studio, and I'm really excited to talk with him all about dating and his life and how he became so successful. So thank you so much for being here with us today. Well, tell me about how you got started in your entrepreneurial journey, because you have had so many ideas and you've also worked for different companies. So take us back to the beginning.
Sure. So I guess, you know, I did the traditional business route. You know, I went to university, got a business degree, and then I got a CPA. You know, so I was a boring, nerdy accountant for years. That was never really my passion. It's something that, you know, the reality is the family kind of pushed you to do it, and I did. So I quickly got out of that and moved into the venture capital world. But, you know, worked in the finance world at a regular job for 10, 12 years. It was never something that I truly enjoyed. You did it because, you know, there's a steady income there. It's something I like to kind of joke about it, but it's almost like having golden handcuffs. It's there, and it's almost easy, even though it doesn't really fuel your fire, right? It's not something you're super excited about. But then, you know, over time, I ended up going through a divorce. And when you go through life-changing moments, it tends to make you reevaluate your life. And, you know, you see an opportunity to kind of reinvent yourself if you take it. And that's kind of what happened with me. You go through a tough time and you kind of spiral downwards and you find yourself, if you will. I had two baby girls. They were 1 and 4 at the time. So, you know, I feel like I probably hit close to rock bottom, if not. But, in the process of that, there's this homeless man. And it's a longer story, but this kind of takes me to how I got into the entrepreneur world. But I met this homeless man, and probably one of my, you know, I was in a really dark place, but I met this homeless man, and he came up to me and asked me for some money, and I originally said no, and so I kept doing my thing, and oddly enough, 20 minutes later, I ran into him again. He looks at me and says, "I asked you already, didn't I?" And I said, "Yeah, you did," but we ended up having this little friendly conversation, and I ended up giving him $20. And so this man had the most infectious, amazing smile because I gave him this money. And I never forgot that look has been ingrained in my mind. And, you know, I walked away from that. The two things I learned from that, you know, is one, you know, I was in this darker place, and this gave me this warm and fuzzy feeling that I hadn't had for, you know, a while. So I was trying to find myself again. And I just remember saying that I got to do things that make me feel that way again. And then the other thing was that, you know, people, things, opportunities, they come into your life when you least expect it. And you should just say yes to everything. And, you know, this, in a weird way, meeting this homeless man was an opportunity. And if I would have said no again, I wouldn't have seen the smile, and it wouldn't have, you know, made me realize some things, get this moment of clarity. So, you know, I walked away and I said, okay, I'm going to do things that I'm passionate about, and I'm going to say yes to everything that comes my way, whatever it is. And, you know, part of that meant throwing away this mentality that you learn when you go to business school and work in the finance world, that everything's objective and everything's black and white. But, I decided, you know, I'm going to throw that away, and I'm going to start looking at things, you know, what I'm passionate about, what means something to me. So, you know, I just, you know, focused on embracing, taking care of my little girls, and finding things that made me happy, that made give me this warm and fuzzy feeling again, right? That this homeless man gave me. So, you know, I did that for a while, and, you know, it just became happier and happier, you know, and I find, you know, the happier you are, the more people you attract into your life, right? And the more opportunities come your way, which is a really weird thing. You know, that whole adage of, you gotta make yourself happy first, and it's so cliche, but there's so much value to that. So true. So, you know, things went along, and then I got this random opportunity to invest in a football team with Motley Crue's lead singer, Vince Neil. So, I mean, you know, it was so out of left field, so random, but it was really interesting, super intriguing. I mean, you know, as a kid growing up, I'm this huge sports nut, and the idea of owning, you know, a piece of a football team in Las Vegas, of all places, I mean, how do you say no to that? So, you know, I went back to that whole premise of, you know, I'm going to do things not based on the objective black and white reasoning, but am I passionate about it? And, you know, the numbers didn't add up by any means, but it lit a fire under me. Like, this is really cool. This could change some things. So I said yes. So I went and invested some money. You know, it was a meaningful amount of money for me at the time. But it made sense. Again, you know, it made me feel alive, which I think is really important. So, you know, went through this, got to game one. It was, you know, incredibly exciting. It was probably the most incredible moment of my professional career at that point, right? Back to the numbers, they never made sense. So this thing was an utter financial disaster. It was ridiculous. And we didn't even finish the season. You know, my passion was gone. But, you know, that whole thing about, you know, following your passion and it makes you happy, you attract the right people. So in this process, I ended up making a world of contacts. You know, you're in sports and entertainment, and it leads itself to meeting some interesting people that, you know, can open doors or lead to other opportunities, and it did. So what happened out of this, six of us friends, you know, we became friends over time, took that idea. We had this idea to create a fan-controlled football league where the fans could call plays in real time and basically turn professional football into a real-life video game. So, you know, the six of us said, well, this didn't work in Las Vegas. We'd hoped that it would, but let's go on our own and do this and without, you know, any outside help or influencers. And we did. And, you know, it was really just a passion project amongst all of us. But this is really when the whole entrepreneurial journey started for me, right? The football team was just an investment for fun. Didn't know really what it was going to turn into. But this is where it all really began. And you know, once you bite that bug, it's... You can't let it go, right? It's just an incredible feeling. You're working on something that's, you know, it's yours, and you're trying to build it and grow it and everything. So we built this thing. It was called Franchise at the time. So we bought another team in a sister league to what we were in before with Vince Neil. And we built this out. We got to game one. It was, you know, like a year of hard work. It was like 20-hour days, I think, is what it was for a long time. I don't know if I slept 4 hours for at least 6 months. And we got to game one, and, you know, it was, we got a lot of really, really good feedback, and then we ended up with a deal with Twitch to broadcast some of our games, and Sports Illustrated broadcast some of our games, and then, you know, the season was a success, so now we're at the point where we're starting our own league, where all the teams are going to be fan-controlled, and, you know, we have ways to go, but we're hoping to get it up and running by the end of the year in time for NFL season.
That is quite a story. There's so much there. And now I have like 3,000 new questions. But when you're talking about finance, I'm so fascinated by that because I can't even tell you the amount of entrepreneurs I've had on this podcast who are so successful. All of them studied finance. What is that? I don't know why that is. I mean, I didn't go to college, but I feel like maybe having that background of especially the business idea, like the money side of things, is so crucial when you're growing a company.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does add a lot of value. You know, they always tell you to have a good base before you start what you really want to do. And I think in this case, I mean, it makes a big difference because, you know, when you're trying to raise money, you have to be able to talk intelligently about the whole process, right? I mean, there's a process of coming up with an idea all the way to the point of exit down the road. And, you know, if anyone wants to invest with you or come along for the journey, they need to know what that whole process looks like. And, you know, if you go work in finance, you go get a degree, there's, you know, even just the terminology and whatnot, you can come across as more intelligent, more informed, which makes people feel comfortable to do things with you, to jump on board.
I want to talk more about when you went to college and that, but first I want to mention something you said off the podcast before we started, which was kind of a quote that Elon Musk's ex-wife said, which is about being an entrepreneur, kind of the difference between being self-made and being an entrepreneur, as well as just having an idea. And you dove right into it by saying about the purpose, that you found your purpose.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's just two things, right? The first thing is to find your passion. And you know, that's almost easy to do. We all have something that we're really passionate about. So, you know, that's the first step, the easy step. The next step is the why. I mean, you know, there's a difference between having a passion and being able to do that as a hobby versus having a passion and being able to do that as your day-to-day. This is your life. And I think if you're going to be able to do that, you have to come up with something, a why. I like to say a why. You know, a reason that you truly want to do this, and this can't be power or money or anything like that, but a real reason. And that's obviously going to be different for everybody. It could be you want to change society, you want to make society better in some way. For me, it's my kids. I've got two little girls, and, you know, for me, I want to show them that anything's possible. So I've always got this. You know, there's in any entrepreneurial journey, you're going to come up with numerous times where you're going to have a monumental challenge. And, you know, what separates people from being able to do that as a hobby versus being able to do that in as your day-to-day is the people that are willing to go through that monumental challenge and face it head on and make it to the other side. And if you don't have that real why, that real purpose, it's really hard because it's really easy to give up. I mean, there's thousands of times I wanted to give up over this whole process. And, you know, for me, it's one look at my kids and I remember why I'm doing this. And, you know, it's back to working, you know, working until the wee hours of the night as opposed to, you know, sitting on my couch watching TV.
So back to the beginning when you decided you wanted to go to college, you're originally from Canada and you're still based there. So you travel back and forth to LA and to West Coast and East Coast quite often. But how did you decide what college you wanted to go to? And what is the schooling system, I guess, like in Canada? I mean, do you know how different it is?
Yeah, it's no different.
It's no different.
Yeah, okay. Exactly the same. Same process. As far as which school I wanted to go to, I mean, to me, you know, college was a means to an end. And it was just convenient. I went to the same hometown that I lived in, and it was about getting that degree and getting into the working world. So I went through that process, the 4-year degree, but I overloaded all my semesters and finished in 2.5 years because I just wanted to get on the working world really bad. In hindsight, it's probably not smart. I mean, I don't recommend that. I mean, enjoy those years and have a lot of fun. But it was something that I just knew I had to do to be able to do the things I wanted to do later in life, whatever that was going to be. I don't think that's necessarily the right way to do it. I think you should probably take your time and figure out, you know, what you want to do, and don't rush into the college process unless you're really ready and know whether that piece helps you. So I hear a lot of people that go to college just because they think it's the right thing to do. But I mean, you're going to spend time, you're going to spend money. I mean, there's so many skills, and I hate to say this, right? College is very important, but if you're going with a purpose, I think. But otherwise, there's so many other skills you can learn without going to college.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the people skills, just talking to people. I think that's something that really lacks nowadays, the face-to-face interaction. You know, it's where the dating app comes in as well. But, you know, I think that's one thing that never goes away. As much as technology is going to start taking over our lives, that face-to-face interaction with people and being able to have those people skills is the top of the heap of what you want to do, what you want to grow.
You have two daughters, so obviously you're in the midst of like everything relating to social media and mental health, and you have an app that's completely based really offline. I mean, online, but you know, offline, I guess, in that sense. So when it comes to college, if you don't necessarily know what you want to do, if you have no clue, or you feel like you're halfway through that degree, how do you advise young people to figure out their purpose?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Most parents would probably disagree with me, but I mean, my girls, that's what I tell them, I'm going to support you whatever you want to do as long as you're passionate about it. If you're not, I'm not going to help you at all. But if you find something, and maybe that just means taking a trip around the world because you meet people, you see different experiences, and that can help you find something. You don't know when you're going to, you know, the light bulb goes on, that you're going to say, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what my passion is. And that takes time and experience in life and everything. So, yeah, I mean, or even, you know, just go get a job as a server, as a bartender, because you meet people, you talk to people.
Did you do that?
I did. So I was, my first job was a suit and tie job. I never had a regular job growing up. They're most teenagers.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
So, is that because you wanted to be an entrepreneur or?
Well, I wanted to be in the business world.
Okay.
I didn't know whether I wanted to be an entrepreneur or not, but I definitely wanted to be in this way. I mean, when I was 13, I had 2 subscriptions to magazines, and this just dates me a bit because everything's online. But I had Sports Illustrated and Fortune Magazine, which is a business magazine. So, I mean, this is, I was a nerd growing up, and I still am.
The nerds are the coolest people. I don't know why people are get so overlooked by that or think that they're not the coolest people. I mean, those are the people who change the world. But I have so many young people that I meet with, and you know, I bet you do too, or even people who are older who have this concept that nowadays entrepreneurship, I find, is so glamorized. Like, everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. Even people who are in the business field in 30, 40, they're like, they just want to have a company. But everyone now wants to just jump. They think that's like you wake up and have that one idea. But I don't personally think that's how it is. I mean, I've had so many ideas that I couldn't execute after 6 months of trying, and I just gave up. And then I had like 2 ideas that actually stuck. So do you feel like you, if you want to be an entrepreneur and get in that world, that you just wake up and have an idea, or is it something that happens after a gradual period of time?
I mean, I think it probably can happen both ways, because you never know. You wake up one day and you got this perfect idea, and then you execute it. I think the big thing is that don't be scared to take some risks and try them out and see where it takes you. Because I mean, part of being an entrepreneur is failing a lot of times, and in a lot of, I mean, different scales of failure, right? But that's a big part of it. So I mean, I think you can't. It will probably come at you by doing different things, and go back to saying yes to every opportunity, because you never know what that leads you to, who you end up meeting, who could, you know, strike a chord with you and tell you something that'll, you know, this is awesome, and it'll try this.
So the first idea that you had, which was it? Was it?
It was the football team.
It was the football team. And when you first had that idea, what did you do? Like, what was the first step? And what year was that?
So this was 2015. This is 2015, so 4 years ago. The first step was, I think the one thing is having the idea and the work that goes with it. But the other thing is to do it with people that you trust and you like to be around. Because this is something, I mean, you know, so just as well as I do, that you're going to have calls at 1 o'clock in the morning. You're going to have, you're going to be working all day, every day, and maybe talking to these people all day long. They become your, they're who you're with more often than not. So, I mean, I think really spend some time. And if you're going to do this with someone else, make sure you're doing it with someone, they're the right people to do this with. And that's happened with us. Like, we're the 6 of us, we're the best of friends. You know, whether someone's still involved in that or not, we still talk almost every day. That was the first biggest part. And then, we all made sure we were on the same page and what we wanted to do, and realized what we were getting ourselves into, which is huge, right? So, I mean, that initial planning is pretty important. And then after that, it was it's a little bit like the Wild Wild West. You kind of just, everyone does what they can. Like, I think in entrepreneurship,
I like that.
It is a bit though, right? I mean, you just go.
Yeah.
You just go and try to put some things together.
Yeah.
And then you start,
yeah.
Now you get a formulated plan, but you have to go see what you can bring together first, right?
I think that's so important that you mentioned that, because there's also the expectation that, like, if you're an entrepreneur, I guess maybe it's because once you know about somebody's company, you just are seeing it for how it is, but you're not thinking about the fact that when they started, I mean, there's no guide to how to be an entrepreneur. I mean, people make it, but it's like, people, I feel like I've made that guide, but there is no, like, here's your idea, here's the first step. Like, it is really like the Wild Wild West. I say it's like survival of the fittest.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, if you're in the role of being an entrepreneur, you're doing something new. This is something that probably hasn't been done before. So you can't, there's no guide to it. There can't be a guide to it, right? You got to try different things, try new things. It's just part of the process, and you can fail along the way.
When you started the football company then, and you had a team of, so there were 5 other people.
Right.
Were you still working as an accountant?
I was.
Okay.
I was, I had a full-time job. To be honest, I moved away from the accounting world kind of a few years into my career. So I was in the venture capital world.
Okay.
After that. So yeah, I was still working in the venture capital world, and I had this. And, after a while, they both became full-time jobs, which was crazy. And then I had, my girls to take care of in the meantime. But, if that's why you have to make sure there's a why and you're super passionate about it. And that was definitely the case for this. I mean, I spent 6-7 months not sleeping more than 3 or 4 hours a night. It was crazy. I can't tell you how many times I worked. I think at one point I worked, it was a 46-hour stretch.
Oh my gosh.
Without sleep. So
that, I don't know, I could do that without sleep, but was this with the football?
This is with the football, because I still have a full-time job.
And I feel like that stuff is like quite virtual. Like, you have to be on it all hours of the night.
100%.
Yeah.
There's if you think about it, like, the football team is, you put on a large event that you can be really successful at, but you know how much is involved in putting on any sort of event. So a football team is essentially putting on an event every week, if you think about it, right? Because that's what it is. So there's so many moving parts. And you don't realize that. I was such a sports fan growing up, but until you get behind the scenes, you have no idea how much is really involved in it. It's It's a really neat thing when you see the behind the scenes. Now when I watch a football game, I'm thinking of all the other stuff that has to go on before it really gets to the point where it's on TV.
So you worked and came up with this company, but you waited a decent amount of time until you left all of your full-time jobs. How important is it to be completely like financially stable before you just leave and do the side hustle?
I think part of the process of being an entrepreneur is, you know, proving to whatever you know, the universe or whatever it is, proving to the universe that this is something you really want to do. And part of that is, you know, you have to be able to pay the bills. That's the reality of it. And I think you just have to feel when you're ready, you'll know when it's time to pull the plug on the other thing. But, you know, it was 2 years for me where I did everything and anything just to make it happen.
Well, I mean, it's so intimidating, and I think that's why it's so scary to try and get into the world of entrepreneurship. Not to deter anyone, but I think that it's very important for people to realize that a lot of times at the beginning of any startup, there is not a lot of balance. I mean, you said you were working these ridiculous hours, and that's obviously not super healthy to, like, stay up for, like, 4 days straight. But also, I mean, when you're so passionate about something and you really know your purpose, then that's what drives you to stay up. That's what drives you to work all those hours.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, we were talking about this off the air about Elon Musk's ex-wife quote, and that was the thing, right? That you can work hard. You can work as hard as you want, and lots of people are willing to do that. But then the other piece of it is, to be really successful, are you making someone's life better, whether it's society or, you're changing the world in some way? And I think that's... When you add both of those together, that's when you have a real shot.
So tell us about Loka, which is the dating app that you started.
Yeah, so this came about with, so I've got my two baby girls, and they were poking fun at my love life one night. So, I've been really busy over the last few years with my kids and my business and, you know, working full-time jobs. So that part of my life had to kind of take a backseat for now. But, you know, when your daughters tell you something, and, you know, I have a super close relationship with them, so I do listen when they say something. It really resonated with me. Like maybe this is something I should put some effort into. So I had been a guy that was into the online dating, but I thought, you know, like my lifestyle doesn't really lend itself to meeting people out in the real world. So let me give this a shot. So I did. I thought about just writing a book instead of developing a dating app, because I'd probably make a whole lot of money just selling that book. So I had the craziest stories that came out of this, you know, this foray into the online dating world. And it didn't work for someone like, you know, someone like me I have very little time. I can't, you know, text with 20 different options and figure out who's the right one and then go on a date. And, you know, everyone's had stories from their friends, if they're not doing it themselves, that, you know, your first date generally doesn't go well anymore. It's a volume game as opposed to a quality game. So my friend Norm MacDonald, he's a comedian. Some of you may know him. He's from Saturday Night Live fame and done a ton of things. You know, a lot of people say he's one of the greatest pure comedians of all time. So I was over at his house whining about all these first dates I had. And he's the kind of guy that needs to go down that rabbit hole and get to the bottom of everything. So we did. We talked well into the night, and we eventually realized, you know, the problem is first dates. They just don't go well anymore. And they're kind of a waste of time, because there's a really cool stat that I learned after the fact, that the cost of a first date in every state is what was published. But it's upwards of $300 when you're living in a place like New York or L.A. Because, you know, you Uber somewhere, you go have drinks, you go to dinner, and it's your time, right? You got to spend your time. When we talked to a behavioral scientist, and they said within 8 minutes, that's when you realize whether there's a connection that's worth going and exploring more. So that's kind of what came up to the idea. So we looked at online dating, at least from my eyes, and saw all the problems that I saw. And then we came up with Loka. So the idea is, it's the goal at the end of the day is to try to, you know, bring romance back to dating. This idea of the magical first date, you hear it in movies, but, you know, in this day and age, I'm not really sure it exists anymore, because the reality is you get to know the person through texting. And by the time you get to that first date, you probably know a lot about them. And that magical first date used to happen because you'd spend all night getting to know them for the first time and really build this connection. So that's our ultimate goal, to try to force people to get back out there, have face-to-face interaction, and, you know, have more meaningful dates, have more quality as opposed to quantity. So that's kind of how we came up with the whole concept. So every profile is video. There's no static pictures, so you can't fake it. You know what you're getting into. So it's a safe, enjoyable community. There's a human that approves every single profile. And so it's fun content. You know, anyone I talk to kind of says this is actually really intriguing, whether I'm interested in them or not. It's fun to see their take on things, right? We got people doing raps and dances and everything. So that's the first step. And then the next step is we've removed the text messaging altogether. So if you connect, we call it connect, but you know, similar to matching or in any of the other apps. If you connect with someone, all that pops up is a calendar. So we appreciate there's a lot of friction and all the other apps are trying to remove friction. But we think this, you know, having this other barrier is important because it makes you think about the process. This is a really important decision in your life. At least it should be. And if we slow that process down, we can, you know, make people take the time to really realize is this good or not. And, you know, just going back to the video profiles, so we force people to press play. So you can't just have a gut instinct reaction to looking at, you know, a static photo. You have to press play, you know, hear the sound of their voice or whatnot, and then you can decide whether you connect or not. So this calendar pops up, and then you will, you basically set up a time to have your video chat within the app, so you know, not give out any personal information or anything at this time. Once you both agree on the time, you can come back to the app, you go into your portal, and you have this video chat. So we cap the video chat in 15 minutes. And this goes back to the 8 minutes that the behavioral scientist said that that's what it takes to know whether you have a connection or not. So we gave you a little bit extra time, but the goal is, okay, you've unveiled who this person is. That anxiety of meeting them in real life is now hopefully gone. And this will promote you to go in real life and have a coffee or whatever it is, coffee, dinner, or whatever. But then, you know, if we can force you to do that before you know everything there is about them, we can reintroduce this idea of the magical first date again, and, you know, more people have meaningful dates. And, you know, I think dating culture needs to be improved. I think it's kind of lost its way. So, and then that's the end goal.
I am so fascinated by dating. I think in my next life, I would have been a dating expert, which I guess, can you consider you to be a dating expert?
I don't know if you're calling me a dating expert.
But I mean, you have a dating app, so I feel like that's something that you could be called.
I suppose I spend a lot of time, you know, researching dating and what works and what's not. So I guess, from one point of view, I think I've come up with something that can help the dating culture.
Sure. You know, I want to mention too that obviously, like, if any of you guys are younger than 18, I feel like that's how old you have to be on most dating apps, that and in general, however old you are, to be like quite careful. I mean, I think what's great about Loco is you've created a very safe environment.
Right.
If you're comparing it to other apps like Tinder or Grindr or Bumble, and I know about like all of these apps through myself and my friends, you know, I think that there's a lot of times there where there is like a questionable way for how you meet somebody or what somebody's initial reaction is. But oh my God, I can't even, I have now so many questions from everything you just said about that. But take us through the beginning of when you first had this idea and then how you guys brought that to life. I mean, creating an app is not an easy thing.
No, there's definitely a lot that goes into it. So and this goes back to what I was talking about earlier about saying yes to every opportunity, and, you know, it grows your network at the very least. And, you know, because of, you know, what I've done with the Fan Control Football League, it's, you know, opened a world of, you know, connections in the whole tech space and whatnot. So, I mean, the first step was, again, the people side. So I wanted to, you know, try to get the best of the best and really leverage my network. And so I spent, you know, a good chunk of time getting the right people from the marketing side to the development side. And once we put that together, you know, we were all very like-minded. I was really excited about what we had in place. And then it was about, you know, building out the app. And there's so much more that goes into it. You know, you see the final product, but there's, you know, if-thens going everywhere, right, to figure out how it all works. So we started developing. We came up with, you know, a master plan and developed it. And, you know, we were really lucky. 6 months into it, we had an app that was live on the app stores.
Someone listening to this might think, okay, so you said that you did dating apps for a while, and from what I know, it seems like, and from what I know of so many people who are on apps, it's if you don't have the time to necessarily go out to like bars or restaurants and then the cost of doing that. But I mean, did you try that route and it just didn't work while?
It didn't work. Yeah. I mean, I want to say a good 4 months of trying.
Why didn't it work? I mean, but that's for everyone nowadays. It is so hard to go out anywhere and meet somebody.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I think it doesn't work because you don't really get a real sense of who the person is. And then you build this story in your mind about who you think they are as opposed to who they are. And this is, I mean, in some cases, it's of no fault of the other person. It's just this is what you've come up with. Or you build a story around this person about how you met them, what they're going to look like and everything. And then you go meet them and, you know, they don't meet this story that you created in your head. And then the other side of it, too, is you've got to know them a lot about them already, so there's no mystery, right? And I think that's part of the magic of dating, is this mystery about learning about someone and finding out about them and, you know, getting to know them that way. So, you know, it just in it it just didn't work. It didn't work. Nothing really matched with what I was really looking for, and it's really hard to get that connection through texting.
I think that's so true, and I think that nowadays there's so many and so much competition, and I think, I don't know if you agree, but like on these apps, I mean, from all the ones that I mentioned, there's so many people, and it's so easy to just like think somebody's cute and like swipe left or right or whatever and then talk to them. But I mean, why is it so difficult? I certainly feel like primarily more for men, it's much more difficult for them to kind of pick who they would want to go on a date with. So they just keep trying to see like if there's something better out there.
Right. Now, I think that's a really good point. I think because it's so easy, because the volume piece of it is always there, you're trying to look for something that doesn't exist. Like perfection doesn't exist, right? You have to kind of work in a relationship and take your time and learn from the good and the bad and everything. And yeah, with all these opportunities out there, it's allowed people to just, you know, toss this one aside and go find somebody else, which is, yeah, not healthy, I don't think, at all.
Did you see the Netflix show Dating Around?
No, I haven't.
You need to watch it. I think everyone listening to this should watch it. I thought it was fantastic. Basically, to sum it up, it was like they casted this show in New York. It was like seven different people, and they set them up on completely blind dates. And I thought that it was so fascinating to see the dynamic nowadays of like how people interact, and especially people who don't know each other. So that's just a random side note. I think everyone listening should certainly watch it. But how did you go about that? I mean, the funding, especially for an app, is this something that you guys started pitching out, trying to get investors? Did you completely self-fund this?
Yeah, so at the start, I self-funded it. And then basically self-funded it, got it out in the App Store, and we wanted to do like a test phase to see if the concept worked. And we found it did. So we had basically every connection led to, you know, a subscription. So how it works is it's free to use up until the point of scheduling that video date. And then it's $1.49 for unlimited video dates a week. So it's not meant to be, you know, cost prohibitive. But the idea was if you add that $1.49 in there, it adds another barrier that you have committed people to the process. You know, it's less than a cup of coffee. It's cheaper to do it this way than this to go out. But I think this helps just keeping our community, you know, a better quality community. So, you know, we did that. And so every match had turned into a subscription. So we realized the whole process worked. And then, you know, we were talking to brands about, you know, trying to partner up with them and collaborate with them. And we had a ton of interest. They thought this was really unique. So, you know, we put all those things together. We kind of went on the fundraising path. And we were really successful. We got, you know, really good valuation I'm happy with, and a lot of dollars to take us to the next phase of where we want to go to.
Is the fundraising that you guys did through, like, Kickstarter, or was it more like...
No, it's more traditional. And that's where my whole venture capital background helps a lot, right?
And I think that might be kind of sometimes the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your network is huge, especially when you're going to go out in the entrepreneur world. So you have to build it up somehow. And, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, go travel and meet people. You know, you might be 19, 18 at the time, but they're all going to be successful people down the road.
Yeah.
Hopefully, and you never know. They might be able to help you in something you do 10 years down the road. And with Facebook and everything like that, it is actually really easy to keep in touch with people in that manner.
So when I think of an app like Tinder or Grindr, I think of people, you know, I don't know, 18 to like 25. I feel like I'm out of touch with this demographic, even though it is my demographic. But what is the demographic for Loco?
Sure. So we originally started this to kind of reach out to the 28 to 42 range, because we thought that market wasn't being serviced. You know, the people that don't have time, you know, they don't have as much time, because, you know, probably the kids, they're more, you know, more into their career, and they're working a lot more hours and whatnot, so they don't want to go on 100 dates. They just want to find one that's going to be meaningful. So that was the original target. But then once we were doing our research, it was funny, we realized that there's that 18 to 22 range that they're kind of tired of what the dating world is. Like the 22 to 28, they're so used to what's out there, right? This is how they started their dating life, and they're comfortable with it. But that newer group that's coming up, they're kind of fed up with it. And the flip side is they're really comfortable with video because of Instagram and, you know, Snapchat and whatnot. So they're really intrigued. So we've kind of changed our marketing plan to really just go after everybody and then see where it lands. I have a feeling we'll end up with a larger kind of 28 plus down the road, but what we've got planned over the summer is kind of targeting everybody.
And you guys started in 2017.
Yeah, that was when the idea first came up. Yeah.
So you've had not a lot of time at all, but you've had, like, you know, maybe like a solid year in this game of kind of trial and error with apps. So how do you think, and how would you describe dating in the end of 2018 into 2019 compared to maybe like when you would have gone out to a bar and met a girl?
Yeah, it's completely different. I mean, I can't, it's so, I mean, to give you an example, so I married my first girlfriend, so I never really dated, and I was with her for 15 years. So when I had to go into the dating world, it was crazy. I mean, I understood how the dating world worked back in my day, even when I married my first girlfriend. But it was mind-blowing to how society is. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's turned into this hookup culture as opposed to like a dating culture looking for romance and, you know, long-term relationships. And, you know, that's, you know, there's a connotation to crazy, of course, with their name. And we've, you know, part of that is because when I first started dating, when I became single again, like the dating world was crazy. I had no other way to put it. The way I look at things is technology in general overshoots itself. And I think in the social networking space, it definitely has, you know, it was always intended to bring people closer together. And I don't think anyone had ill intentions, but, you know, the side effect of what ended up happening is it almost pushed people further away because now you don't have this human connection with people. And that's really the only way to connect. You know, you can be on your couch at 11 o'clock at night and thinking you're connecting with someone. Yeah. But it's a really isolating feeling, right? So I think, you know, the next phase of not just dating, but social networking apps in general is to rein it back in. And this is one space where technology can't take it over. It has to be a balance, right? I think technology is to, you know, give you this opportunity to meet people you wouldn't have otherwise met. Just in your daily lives, but I think after that it has to stop, and then you have to bring back that human interaction piece of it. And I think, you know, it's funny, someone asked me that question yesterday about where do you think dating is going to be in 20 years, and I think it's going to be closer to what it was, mm-hmm. you know, back in my day of dating.
Yeah, I think it's so important that you say that. And I mean, what you guys have done with Loco is truly so different than these traditional like swipe right, swipe left, so kind of like a quick thing. But through your research and when you were starting this and dating on your own, if you could pick the best app and the worst one out of like, you know, the top apps out there that are dating. I know that's kind of like an on-the-spot question because I was thinking about it.
That's interesting. Okay. I think Hinge works really well.
Yes, I agree. I've used Hinge a long time ago.
Yeah, because it's more... I think it's more interactive. And
yeah.
You can tell, it seems like you can give a little more of your real personality up. At the end of the day, I don't like to really say a lot of negative things about different apps because they all have their place. And there's certain people that are going to gravitate to that and it works for them. And really, I mean, from my point of view, there's a stat that every person that's using online dating is on at least 4 apps at any given point in time. So, you know, from my business side of it, for Loco, you don't have to say to theirs is bad and ours is good. We just have to say, look, we're giving you a fresh new way to try to meet the love of your life. Here's a better alternative. So we just want to be one of your 4. So can I get away with that without picking one I don't like?
Yeah, I mean, is there one that you say is necessarily not for long-term relationships?
I think it's Tinder, right? I think, you know, obviously there's some that are, you know, the Ashley Madison's of the world that are just tailored towards that, you know, the hookups and whatnot. But I mean, I think Tinder is it's really... I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like a video game.
And that's the first one that came out. I mean, that's the one that has the biggest office, I feel like, out of all of them.
Right. I think in technology, that happens a lot, right? The first to market, you know, maybe does overshoot itself and doesn't end up being the one that's there in the end, or they change their path.
Yeah. So when it comes to Loco, I mean, would you consider and compare it more to a Bumble, or would you consider it more to like a Match.com? Because you didn't mention any of the ones that are like more of the matchmaking sites.
Right. And, you know, I'd like to think that we're completely different because all of those at the end of the day are still based on static photos and texting. And I think, you know, we're trying to, you know, really get people out there and, you know, meet face-to-face and, you know, build some of those skills about talking to people, interacting with people that I think is really lacking with any of them out there. Like, I get that, you know, some of the market, like eHarmony's market towards a real long-term relationship, and that's where we are. We're trying to promote, you know, committed long-term relationships. You know, that's probably where your question's going.
Yeah. So you have 2 daughters. How do you advise them to use social media? I mean, how old are they?
They're 10 and 7.
They're quite young.
Yeah, so they're, I mean...
They're not in the crazy dating world from that.
Yeah, far from that. Yeah, they better be. I mean, my 10-year-old talks about social media now. She wants a phone. I'm against it. I have, like, my initial gut thought on all this is that, you know, a lot of the anxiety in society today has to do with the social media side of things. So I want to try to keep my girls away from that for as long as I possibly can. And it's really hard for me to say that because I'm essentially in that space. It's really difficult when you have this world of people that you're comparing yourselves to. Like, when you're that young that's such a hard thing to do. It's how do you not kind of go down that spiral of depression and whatnot? Because none of that's real. I mean, I should say none of that's real, but a lot of it's not real. There's very few genuine posts out there, right? They're tailored for their Instagram feed or whatnot. So it's a really tricky thing. But the other side of it, and I can't block them from, you know, what society, they have to be able to fit in and whatnot. So I'm going to try to keep them away as long as I can.
Do you have an age that you think you would give them a phone?
I mean, I think it more has to do with their maturity level.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be 10, it could be 13. I think we'll just have to see.
I think it's so important for parents nowadays, because I get asked that a lot, to not be helicopter parents, but also be involved. Like, I feel like, I don't know, because my mom never did this, nor did I have an iPhone, like, when I was 10. But, I mean, I feel like there's ways to, like, set off what times you can use your phone. I mean, I feel like the biggest stem of kids not being able to sleep is that they're on their phone till the minute they shut their eyes.
Yeah.
And then they all have, like, they need Adderall and all this stuff. But you guys have some incredible partnerships with Wango Tango and with the Daily Front Row, which is huge for a startup 2 years in. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, we're really lucky. And like you said, you know, when we were first going out and talking to who would, you know, we could partner with, we were really excited with who was interested in partnering with us. On the flip side, you know, and that helped motivate me to, you know, go raise some money and really kind of rip the band-aid off with this whole marketing plan and really get out there.
So the response from Loco, I assume from most people, has been amazing.
It has been positive. It has been very positive. Yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, there's a certain group that this is probably not for.
Yeah.
But, you know, our goal is that if we cater to the people that do like this, eventually they'd give us a try.
That's so important. And it's so important to also realize, I think, that, you know, there's obviously a cost at some point. You know, it's not expensive, but for being on the app, but the people that you would want to meet on that app are the people who would probably be putting a little bit of money out to meet the right person.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, more like-minded people, right? And the other side of it too is, I mean, the fact that they're willing to put themselves out there and do a video says they're, you know, they're serious about the process. And, you know, they're a little more outgoing, so the chance of having a more interesting, you know, colorful date is that, I mean, you're going to attract a certain personality to what we're doing and what we're asking for.
You've certainly had quite a life from all of your endeavors and all the companies that you've started. So what is one piece of advice you have for aspiring entrepreneurs out there?
That's a good question. Where do I start? How about Jim Carrey, the comedian Jim Carrey? He had this incredible speech. If you ever get a chance to listen to it, you really should. It's really long, but the one piece of it is one quote that he said in there, and I probably can't do it justice, but it's so many of us pick our path out of fear disguised as practicality, because we think we can't ask for the impossible. But I think you can, and, you know, there's no guarantees that it's going to work out, but I can promise you it'll be the greatest adventure you'll ever have, and you'll end up somewhere.
I love that. Is the end goal for you personally, as well as for the app, to be the next Bumble or be the next Hinge, or no?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, I think I just like to take it one step lower, and that's just, if we can help dating's culture, I think, become a little bit better, and, you know, that helps my daughters, helps me, you know, I think that's our first goal. And, you know, I like to always think the rest of it takes care of itself. If you can, you can do the right things, you know, make a difference in some way, the mindset always, you know, takes care of itself.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can everyone find you and Loco on social media?
Sure. So Loco is LOKO in Google Play or the Apple App Store. You can find me anywhere, LinkedIn.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 73 now. We're almost at episode 100, though that's like 30 weeks away. But I think that this was a really great episode. And I think if you really want to know more about the dating culture, I would definitely listen to Jenna's episode. And then, you know, we had Amanda on, like I mentioned, from the League. And this is so completely different. And I mean, the League is definitely more in the sense of kind of the younger demographic, but it really goes based on the swipe right or left. So I think what you've created truly has created a new area for the dating world and what people can expect out of that. So if you are looking to meet somebody who's not terrible, I would definitely, definitely stay away from the Tinders, and definitely, definitely check out Loco. So make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered on social media at This Is Life Podcast. And my personal social media is @Alexa_Curtis. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye.